afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining me today. This is Hashtag No Limits. Hashtag No Limits is about people whose society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino. And Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. For anyone who doesn't know, the caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells, and then it reforms and becomes the butterfly. While it's still in the cocoon, it has to fight in order to get out of that cocoon for its wings to be strong enough to carry it where it needs to go. That cannot be an easy thing to do, but neither is busting through the limits that society places on people. And today, my guest is sharing something that is a little bit different than what I normally share. And when I saw his story, I knew it had to be shared on my show. I wanted to help get his story out. You're going to see that it's a different kind of limit that is being busted through with his story. And so I don't want to talk too much more. I was just trying to give people a little bit of a chance to join in. So welcome and thank you so much, Barry, for what you're doing.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, Shelley.
Yeah, absolutely. So I gave a tiny hint that, you know, this show is going to be a little bit different than my typical show. What is it that I mean by that? What is your background story?
Well, it's interesting. When people ask me to tell them something about myself, what I tell them is I'm not the right guy to be doing this. I never planned on becoming someone that would, you know, bare his soul to, you know, 150, 200,000 people. That was just not part of my plan. But here I am.
Yeah. And so what we're going to talk about today, and maybe I do need to caveat this, I don't typically believe I have any younger listeners, but we're going to talk about death, and we're going to talk about drinking. I live in a county in Southern Illinois, and I looked this statistic up just before coming on to see how accurate it was. When I was growing up, when I was a teenager, we were the highest consuming per capita county of alcohol in our state. And at that time, I believe we were like third in the entire nation. It has gotten better, but we are still in the 118th ranking of all counties in the country for our alcohol consumption. And not just that, but it's of anyone over age 14. So we're not even talking necessarily legal drinking. I think it's all across the country that the legal age is 21, but maybe it's just a state by state thing. I'm not sure. So Barry, tell us about your son and kind of a little bit of what I'm referring to.
So my son, we honestly never had any problems with him. His high school principal didn't even know who he was. This all happened on the day he moved out on his own. He had just graduated from high school. It's kind of interesting because when he got out of high school, he wanted me to co-sign a loan so he could buy a new truck, right? And of course, I made him give me 3 months worth of insurance payments and car payments because I didn't, you know, I wanted him to be financially responsible for it.
Sure.
And he went down, he found one at a dealership, and I hate to say it, but I'm not a fan of that process because they're always going to try to sell me stuff I don't want or need, right?
Right.
And this is where I say I'm just the wrong guy. I went in there and sat down in the financial guy's office. The first thing he said to me is, how about some life insurance? And I said, I don't need any life insurance. My wife will do just fine if something happens to me. And he said, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about your son. And I'm that guy. I'm that guy who rather indignantly told him that 18-year-old boys don't need life insurance because they don't die. But I was wrong. They do die. He wouldn't live long enough to make a single payment on that truck. So A few weeks later, he started the process of moving out. They threw a housewarming party for him that night. I started with a keg of beer and moved on to shots. He left a voicemail for his sister that night, telling her about how he was drunk and having a good time. He passed out a short time later. They laid him in his bed on his side in case he vomited, but the party was still going on. They actually went in and shaved his head and his legs while he was passed out. His buddy Craig was worried about him. Around 4 a.m., calls started coming in to 911. First calls were difficulty breathing. Next calls, not breathing. My son died alone in the hospital, so peacefully in my bed.
I can't imagine. As I said, I've grown up in a county where alcohol is very normalized, and binge drinking, having parties on the weekends, that was what we did. We live in a rural county in Illinois. Wasn't a lot of other opportunities of things to do. So what did you do? You went to somebody's house, or you went out on the back roads and you drank. Thankfully, I never got into that. I didn't agree with it. And God gave me the power to stand up and say, I'm not going to do that. I did see so many of my classmates coming into school on Monday after having been in bad accidents, or not coming into school on Monday because they were in the hospital. Yeah. I don't recall losing any of my classmates to alcohol while going through school, but I know other classes and other high schools in the area had had that happen. I don't understand what the draw is. I am a person who doesn't like to be out of control. And so I don't understand that draw of just having so much alcohol in you that you don't know what's going on and you don't care what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. You lose control. And that's something that kids don't really understand, you know, and for me, you know, the knock on the door, you know, I open the door again. I'm that guy. I open the door and I see two police officers and somebody in plain clothes at my front door. Right. That should have been a big red flag for me, but it wasn't. I actually joked with them as they came in, thinking this had to have something to do with a dog or a parked car. I had nothing. And one of the officers came in and stood there and he said, your son is dead. And we have a number of children. We asked who it was. And they said it was Kevin. And they handed me his driver's license. And there's just something pretty final about it when a police officer hands you your child's driver's license. Because until that exact moment in time, you're holding out hope that this is all a big mistake, right? You misspelled the last name. You need to be next door, three streets over. But when they hand you your child's driver's license, you know he's gone and he's never coming back.
So what did they tell you at that point? I mean, other than he was dead, and that seems pretty harsh. I hope they didn't put it that way, but
that's what they said. That's how they put it. Wow. They thought that it was alcohol poisoning. We found out later that that is indeed what happened. His blood alcohol content was 0.36%. Very, very drunk. It was interesting. The coroner said that she's seen as low as 0.24% kill specifically teenagers.
Wow.
Because it's just a matter of how your body metabolizes it. One of the things that's going on now, they were doing shots, and a lot of these alcohols that they're selling now are really sweet. And so you can consume a lot of it in a hurry and not realize how much trouble you're in.
And this is something that I think I know the answer to, or I knew the answer to. It's not coming to me at the moment. But is it based on your metabolism as to what the alcohol levels are in your system? Or is it more of like, if you drink X number of drinks, no matter your body type or your body size, you're going to have this level of alcohol in your system?
It's a yes and no thing. I'm sure there are variables to it. What do they say at Mothers Against Drunk Driving? They say, I think a 1.5 ounce shot of what they call liquor will raise your blood alcohol content to 0.016, right?
Okay.
But if you use these sweeter alcohols, it's my understanding that what ultimately happens is your blood sugar spikes. And that's actually where the problem is. But I'm not an expert in that field. I just know that
right. There
is theoretical numbers. They'll say, yeah, if you take this drink, you know, if you have 3 drinks in an hour, you're probably legally drunk.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And like I said, that kind of sounds like the right number that I've heard in the past. But I also, thankfully, our daughter wasn't into that when she was in high school. I mean, we had talked to her, of course, about the dangers, but she grew up in the same county that I grew up in. And as I said, thankfully, you know, when I was growing up, we were 3rd in the country by county. Now we're 118, which is better, but it's still not, you know, it's not something you want to be in the top 150 of.
No.
You know, but I do remember people being proud of it. I mean, that's how I knew the statistic. You're like, oh, we're the number 1 in our state, nor we're 3rd in the country. Is that something we really should be proud of? I don't think so.
No, you know? It's one of those things where nobody really thinks bad stuff's going to happen to them, right? They don't ever believe when they start drinking that they're going to become an alcoholic, but the statistics don't lie. The younger you start drinking, the more likely you are to become an alcoholic. You know, and like I said, I'm that guy. Nobody ever believes it's going to happen to them. That's
right.
And I'm in that category. That's why I say I'm that guy. Nothing bad's going to happen to me.
Right. And normally on this show, when we talk about busting limits, it's busting through limits in a positive way. But for this episode, it's very unfortunate because we're busting through that limit that everyone is at risk, and 18-year-olds aren't invincible.
Well, you know, when you talk about busting through limits, so we decided to have Kevin cremated, right? And I went down to pick up his ashes. You know, you walk into a funeral home, they've got nice pictures on the wall, they're playing music in the background. They set me down in this very nice, comfortable chair with a big desk in front of me. The funeral director walks in and sets a urn down in front of me. An urn that held all the remains of the kid that I burped, changed his diapers, coached his baseball, basketball, soccer, football, taught him to shoot a gun, swing a golf club. All of his remains, all that remained to him, were sitting in an urn in front of me. And this is where the limits thing changes. There's one thing I knew at that point, and that was that I didn't want to be a victim. Because the world doesn't need any more victims. We've got plenty already. The world needs people who take something bad and they make something good come from it. And for me, I thought about what I would hope somebody else would do if it happened to their kid. And for me, it was just to get out and tell the story. Not to raise money, because there is no money in the world that will fix the hurt. It doesn't exist. The only thing that helps is to try to make something good come from a bad situation.
Right. And so you're sitting there. This urn is placed before you. You've decided you want to tell his story. What do you do next?
You go on
podcasts, right?
Well, this actually happened. He died on July 10th of 2005. Yesterday was 18 years.
Wow.
And, you know, I knew I wanted to do that, but I'd never done any of that stuff before, right? I'm not a public speaker. I do more of that now. I do a lot more of it now, both for work and for this. But, you know, in the beginning, I was awful. I mean, I had it all typed out and I would read it and I'd start crying. And it was, I read it, you know, I argued for a long time that, well, Martin Luther King, I Have a Dream speech, he read it. Mm-hmm. You know, I argued a long time I should be able to read it. But at some point, I stopped doing that. And I just started speaking from here, right? And the more times I did it, honestly, the better I got about it. My wife, Bev, did a great job of critiquing everything I did. She was brutally honest, right? You lost him with that, right? I never took any Toastmaster classes. I got a lot of input. One of the things someone told me that has stuck with me about it, this young lady that was helping me with it, I kind of went through it and she goes, I don't really care about all those other details. I want to be in the room with you when you get that knock on the door. I want to walk into that funeral home with you when you pick up his ashes. And that's what I tell kids, because, you know, I'm two generations away from the teenagers and the junior high kids that I talk to, right?
Right.
The first thing I tell them is that I'm not there to tell them how to live their life. I'm just here to tell you a story, because it would be very disingenuous of me to say, I'm going to tell you how to live your life, because I don't live in that generation. I don't know that. But I just want you to listen to this story, and then you can make up your own mind.
Right. And, you know, it had crossed my mind to ask you questions about, you know, what advice do you give? What do you say? What would you recommend? What, you know, and if that flows naturally into our conversation, okay. But I want to hear your heart, because I think we don't share that enough. You know, we give the statistics to kids. We give, you know, oh, this could happen to you. But I really, truly believe that unless you can reach a person's heart, they're not going to change, because it is just going to be a statistic. It is just, oh, that happened to, you know, so-and-so. That's not going to happen to me. And you're sitting here telling me you were that person. Well, that's not going to happen to me. That's not going to happen to my son.
Yeah.
And it did, unfortunately.
Yeah. You know, speaking from the heart, I'm an old hillbilly from Montana, Shelley. This is not how I had my life scripted. I just, to think that I'm doing this now is hard for me to imagine. But by the grace of God, I've worked my way through all of these things. And you know, one of the things, we haven't gotten to this yet, but I'll go ahead and tell the story. So, we kind of wrestled with what to do with his remains, right? I grew up in Kalispell, Montana, and Kevin always talked about wanting to move to Montana someday and buy a ranch. So we decided to take his ashes to Montana from here in Gilbert, Arizona. And, normal thing to do would be to put him in your car and drive there. But I put them in my backpack and walked there and told a story along the way. Again, not to raise money, but I just wanted to tell the story.
Right. Wow. Did you just say Gilbert, Arizona?
Gilbert, Arizona. Yes, that's where I am.
That's just outside of Phoenix, correct?
Yes. Yes.
I was there in January of this year.
It was probably raining a bunch too, wasn't it?
No, the weather was absolutely gorgeous while we were there. And being from Southern Illinois, where it was cold and snowy and rainy, yeah, and going out there for a weekend or 3 days. Yeah, that was very nice. But that just struck me. It's like, wait, that's the same town.
Yeah.
So you decided to walk. Okay. Now for anybody who doesn't know the geography, what kind of distance are we talking about?
About 1400 miles.
Just a day trip. No problem.
Yeah, pretty much. it was one of those things when I decided to do it, it's kind of an interesting thing. I decided I was going to do it. I just, you know, I made up my mind. I talked to Bev about it. We agreed to do it. You know, a lot of people tried to talk me out of it, Shelley. I had family members and numerous people say, well, you know, maybe you just go walk for a couple weeks and then you could come back next year and walk a little bit more and, you know, maybe see how you feel, that kind of thing. But I'm going to do the whole thing in one shot. We're going to walk every step, every bridge that's narrow, everything. We're going to walk every step of it. And I'm glad I didn't let them talk me out of it because they were well-meaning. I understand it. Who do I think, when you look back on it, I don't consider myself arrogant, but it's a pretty brave thing to say, right? Yeah, I'm just going to walk to Montana. It's going to take me about 4 months. Really?
Yeah.
You have any idea what can go wrong in those 4 months?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the things are going through my head. And so, I mean, were you a backpacker before? Was it like, did you ever go on hikes or long walks? Like, what was your training for this, Barry?
Well, I did a lot of training, but I've ran a few marathons. But the idea to walk to Montana actually came from Kevin's favorite movie, which if you have older people in your audience, they will remember Lonesome Dove with Tommy Lee Jones and Robert Duvall. Mm-hmm. That's where the idea came from. I freely admit that's how in my mind I put it together. In the movie, he did it on horseback, right? Have you seen the movie?
It's been a very long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm from the 1900s. So I've been around for a while.
Yeah. That's where in my mind the idea came from. Originally, I was going to walk the Continental Divide, but I wanted to do the speaking stuff. And so I had to try to find somebody to set all that. You can imagine all the logistics. And I'm not independently wealthy. The company I work for actually kept me on the payroll while I did the walk. Just a lot of people stepped up. I did the walking and the talking, but there was a lot of people helping along the way.
Yeah. So, okay. So you're talking, you're walking. Who are you talking to? What does that look like? I mean, are you just like literally, you know, you stop at a cafe to get a drink of water and you just talk to the person next to you or?
Well, there was a fair amount of that because everybody, when you get out on the road, people stop and they want to know, do you need a ride? Why are you out here? That kind of thing.
Right.
An organization called Not My Kid, it's local here to Arizona. They set up all the speaking engagements. So I spoke, okay, I don't know, 30 or 40 times. And back then there was TV and newspaper articles and that. They set all of that stuff up. So you can imagine the logistics around. I had to predict when I was going to be in those towns because they had to tell them it's going to be on this day, right? So I just took a guess and said, I think I can average 90 miles a week. And that's what we did. I didn't have a single sick day or weather day. I had days when I didn't want to go, to be clear, but I always thought might be a little worse tomorrow. I better go today.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Once I got out there, and it's interesting because a walk is a metaphor for life, because one of the things that I got hung up on was 1400 miles. Mm-hmm. I wasn't even out of Arizona and I was not feeling good. I mean, there's Arizona, everybody perceives it's a flat desert. It has a lot of hills in Arizona.
Especially going north. Yeah.
Yes. And I was always thinking about that 1400 miles, but at some point before Flagstaff, I realized that that's kind of a silly thing to do. Why don't I walk 3 more miles, take a break, get up and walk another 3 miles. I blocked out the 1400 miles. And if you think about that for life, you look at these things you want to do down the road that looks like it's insurmountable, right? But you take those baby steps. I'm going to walk 3 miles. I'm going to take a break. And the next thing you know, you're in Montana.
Okay. I'm going to take your word for that.
Maybe not exactly like that, but
right. No, I know what you're saying.
I just kind of blocked that part out. I knew where I was going, mm-hmm. but I didn't spend any time thinking about it.
And so what did you say to these people when you were in these talks at these, like, what kind of places did they set up for you to talk, to do the talks?
Primarily high schools and junior highs. Okay. I've done as young as elementary school, but like I said, I take them to that night. It's right. The best way I can describe it, because a buddy of mine said this, his summary of it was, you punch me in the gut, but then you pat me on the back and tell me I'm going to be okay. Because it's not all that, because obviously I tell everybody, if I can do this, imagine what you could do. But there's three things that I always want them to take away. The first one's about decision making. You know, the two most important decisions you're ever going to make are about drugs and alcohol. It isn't even close. You need to educate yourselves about those dangers as if your life depends upon it, because it does. The second one is about adversity, right? Bad stuff happens to everybody. Nobody's immune from it. The way you respond to it is going to define your life. It just is. It's not maybe. It will.
Right.
And the third thing, and I kind of think it maybe is the most important thing, is this thing called forgiveness. You know, it was easy for me to forgive the guys at the party because this was Kevin's decision, right? And it was easy for me to forgive my kid. But there's one person that was hard to forgive, and you know who it was. It was me.
Yeah.
It took 1,400 miles and 5 pairs of shoes, but I have found a way to forgive myself. I heard a pastor describe it best once. Pastor Chad, he said that anger and vengeance lead to one thing, destruction. Forgiveness leads to healing. And sometimes the most important person you need to forgive is yourself, because none of us are perfect, right? We all make mistakes. It's how you handle it that matters.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when we forgive other people, there's a little bit of a freedom because we're not harboring that anymore.
Yeah.
But when we forgive ourselves for being human, which as parents, we don't know how to not be human. We feel like we have to be superhuman and protect our children from every little thing and every big thing. And if we don't, then we failed. And most consequences that the children face are not as severe as what Kevin faced. And so I think it's big kudos to you that you are able to forgive yourself for being human. You said he was always a good kid. You never had struggles with him. Had he ever had alcohol, to your knowledge, before that night that he moved out?
So there was a couple times that I suspected that he might have been drinking, but I never had anything concrete. But a little bit of backstory here. So I'm no longer married to his mother, but I had custody of the kids, right? So they were at my house. And when they got to be teenagers, they would want to go spend the weekend with their mom. And I said, cool, right? I want you to have a relationship with your mom. Mm-hmm. I found out later the reason they wanted to go over there is because she was letting them have parties over there.
Oh.
Kevin knew. One thing I will admit, I never talked to him a lot about alcohol because we have a relative, close family relative, that's an alcoholic. And he always talked about how stupid he was to do that stuff. So thought he knew.
Right.
I thought.
Yeah. And so there's another person that you had to forgive along the way.
You know, there is, but one of the things that I understood about this grief and this process, which we can talk about grief in a minute, is you can't play the blame game. If you play the blame game, you're never, ever, ever I'm going to get past it. We could sit and blame me. We could blame the alcohol industry. We could blame whoever, right? We could blame the people at the party, but that's not going to bring him back, and it's not productive, in my opinion.
Right.
And that's something we understood very early in the process. I don't remember exactly what it was, but that was something that, at least in this house, that's the way it was going to go.
Well, and it, you know, there are so many limits that are being busted here. I mean, because that busting through that forgiveness for yourself and for others, that understanding that, as you said, adversity comes. How do you handle it? What do you do with it? Do you sit with it and let it fester inside of you and, you know, make you ill and cause more problems? Or do you accept that bad things happen? And how do I make this into a good thing? How do I make good, not that that's it. How do I make good come out of this thing?
Correct. That's my number one thing, making something very good come from this. Yeah.
And so have you had in these talks with students, have any of them ever gotten in contact with you later and said, you know, your story really opened my eyes, or, you know, thank you for telling that story. I'm sorry you went through it, which, by the way, I am very sorry. And I've not said that to you prior to coming on or during this, but I mean, I'm sorry that you went through this. I'm so appreciative that you're sharing and that I have the opportunity to share with my followers. As you can tell, it's an emotional thing for me because I have family members who will go out on the weekends still to this day and drink a lot. I'm still in that county where it's still the thing to do. It's what makes you, doesn't make you popular, but you tend not to stay with the people who drink if you don't drink like they drink, because I don't know why, but it just happens. And it's happened multiple times in my life where I was part of a group, and then after one or two times being out with that group and I thought having a wonderful time, I started not getting invited to things. And the only thing that I was ever able to put my finger on was I didn't say anything to them about their drinking, but I wasn't drinking. And that was somehow uncomfortable or convicting or something to them. And I don't know. Maybe it is me. Maybe it's just my personality. Maybe
I don't think so. That's a thing. You had asked what kind of feedback. I've got a couple things. They're a little bit difficult to tell, but obviously if I can get through them. One of them happened just outside of Flagstaff when I was doing the walk. You know, I saw a car go by and put its brake lights on. So I thought, oh, cool. I'll take a little break here and talk to somebody, because that happened every day. It's really fun to do. And this guy gets out and he said, did you just speak at Flagstaff High School last week? And I said, I did. He gave me a hug. And he said, thank you. Because my son came home and told me about it.
Hmm.
And that's when you know that, you know, they're listening.
Right.
And then there was another time where I spoke at a high school and I got a call a couple weeks later about a party that had been had. One of the students that had heard Kevin's story, he was at a party. There was a bunch of drinking going on. Somebody was passed out. He wanted to call 911, and the kids at the party didn't want him to call 911, right? Because everybody's going to get in trouble. So he put the kid that was passed out in his car and drove him to an urgent care facility. Who called 911. They air-evac'd him out. Save his life.
Hmm. And that's
why I do it.
Yeah.
That's why I do it.
Yeah. And we had an unfortunate situation happen in our area several years ago where it was like that. There was a bunch of underage drinking happening. There was an accident. Someone had fallen, and I don't know the whole situation. But anyway, he was unconscious, and it wasn't because of the drinking that caused him to fall, but because there was so much underage drinking, they didn't want to call.
Yeah.
And he passed away.
Yeah.
And it's awful. I mean, I can't, at the beginning of this, and you talked about, you know, you get the knock at the door, and, you know, these two policemen and a plainclothes dress person are outside your door. And in our area, we know what that means, because it is something that happens.
Yes.
And I can't imagine. I don't even know the amount of strength to have an idea of what they're doing there, and then to be able to open the door to hear.
I just didn't know. I just didn't know, Shelley. I know that. I know that up here, and I know that, and I should have known that. Right? I know that. We all know that. But it just, you know, it was Sunday morning. Just, I guess I wasn't awake enough. Yeah, I agree.
Right. And so, does Kevin have siblings?
He does. He does. He's got 4 siblings.
Were any of them at the party with him? I mean, what?
No. He left a voicemail for his sister that night. But nobody was there. He was the baby of the family.
Okay.
Right. So he was the last one. I really didn't want him to move out, because we never really had any problems with him, and I didn't want him to get in over his head financially.
Sure. We all know what that 18, means. That's early to be moving out.
Yeah. Yeah. He had just graduated from high school, so he was convinced he was going to do it. So. Yeah.
How are the friends doing? How were they after? I mean, I know it's got to be excruciating for you and his mom and his siblings, but those people that were there with him that night, what has this done to them?
You know, it was a watershed moment for them. They still, people ask me, you know, do I still talk to his friends? His 3 of them were over here a couple weeks ago. They all come over and order pizza, and, you know, they're grown and they've got kids now and all of that good stuff. And one of them has said specifically, you know, this was that grown up moment.
Yeah.
Where they realized, yeah, maybe this is not a good idea, right? I mean, because they were all doing this kind of stuff. They were all, you know, they were teenagers, right? Nobody ever believes. But I can tell you that 2 of them that I was a little bit worried about, it was, they're very successful in what they do now. And good. They pointed to that day.
Hmm.
So
there are some good things that have come from this very horrific situation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what I still do, because I'll have to send you a link to those who want to watch it. That phrase, something very good will come from this, is not mine. I'll just put it that way. I can send you a link to it if they choose to watch the video. They can watch it. If they don't want to, that's fine too. But it's really been my focus, and it makes sense, right? It's all you can do. And I've probably told the story, now Bev knows probably how many times, between 300 and 400 times, probably around 200,000 people. I just did another 100 last night. These are adults that, with MAD, they have a victim impact panel, and part of their mission is underage drinking. So these are all DUI offenders, and you can hear a pin drop in the room, because it's one of those things, everybody knows what's coming, but it's you can just feel it.
Yeah. And you do have, speaking of, you know, you were going to send the link. So you do have a website that is called kevinslastwalk.com. Yes. And it looks, I mean, actually I can just share it so that everybody can see it with us really quickly. But you did say you do more of your connecting with people on Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. Yes, that was one of the funnier pictures. That's when that was the first sign I saw on the road that said Kalispell when I was walking from Gilbert, Arizona to Kalispell, Montana. So I was kind of excited to see that.
Right. And how far away were you?
I remember that picture very well. I was about, probably 100 miles from Kalispell at that point, but I had crossed the Continental Divide twice. It snowed again after that, but I wasn't too worried about big snowstorms because I started in February of 2007. So I dealt with snow and rain and going up over the Continental Divide a couple times. And I knew at that point that unless I got hit by a car, which was always a risk.
Sure.
100 miles left to go. I was as the farmer saying goes, I got a whiff of the barn. So
right.
I was heading for the barn.
And so you said, you know, people stopped you and I meant to ask you this earlier. So did you have anything on you as you walked that, like, how did the gentleman that you had spoken at his son's school know that you were the person? Like, did you have a sign or what was it? How did people come to know who you were if they weren't coming to hear you speak already? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I did not wear a sign. That gentleman knew because I talked about walking to Montana, that's what I was in the process of doing. But we also had a truck. It was an F-250 that was wrapped with Kevin's Last Walk and all of that. And everybody that stopped, Shelley had a story to tell.
Yeah.
Mine is a little bit different. Yep, there's the truck. There it is right there. Mine is a little bit different, but when you start talking to people, everybody knows someone who has a problem or, you know, things happened. It's not uncommon.
Yeah. So while you were walking, you weren't completely on your own. Somebody was traveling.
Yes. We haven't talked about that. Yes. my one daughter walked part of it with me, but my wife, Bev, who's very thorough about everything, kept track. She's the one that met me every 3 miles. She would drive that truck up 3 miles, find a place to park somewhere, and then I would stop and take a break. She managed the hotel room. She managed making sure I knew where I was supposed to be that day. She managed all of that stuff. She did a phenomenal job. I still have I didn't throw it out. She kept track of the time that I left each mile marker and the time that I got to the next mile marker. Because it's hard to tell, you know, should I be worried about him? Because she's up there three miles, you know, what should I do? She kept track of that and people would stop and talk to me and I'd get delayed, right? And so then she's starting to worry. What's going on? Why isn't he here yet? Because he should have been here 10 minutes ago.
Right.
Not all of it was that wide open stuff that you saw there, right? And the wide open stuff, she can look out there and see me coming. But there was a lot of stuff where she doesn't know where I am. I mean, I had a guy on an 18-wheel truck stop in the middle of a two-lane road to talk to me.
Wow.
Yeah. I hope nobody comes. And they didn't. Roads were pretty quiet. It's a busier road now. I mean, I didn't walk on the freeways because I couldn't get any commitment that they wouldn't kick me off of the freeway. And the freeway was the shortest route, so I had to take, you know, side roads.
Yeah. So I do see here that you have a book. Do you want to speak to that at all?
I can. It's Kevin's Last Walk. It's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Primarily people buy it off of Amazon. It was interesting because the way that came about, again, a little bit of a story. I kept a journal on the walk, and back then they had a place they posted this journal, and people were, every day they get up and see what I did the day before and all of that. It was, so I had the journal. When I got all done with it, I told one of my friends I was just going to print it out, put it in a binder, and if you want a copy of it, let me know. Much like my wife being honest with me, I had a friend say, no. You need to write a book. And I'm like, I don't want to write a book. I don't know how to write a book. But I did. And actually, I considered writing a book harder than walking to Montana. Because, as I said earlier, walking to Montana, I get up every morning and I know exactly what I'm going to do. How do you write a book? Right? I don't have that in me. Right? I never thought about writing a book, but I give kudos to Stephen King. He wrote a book on how to write a book.
Oh.
And yeah, he does all kinds of other stuff, but he wrote one on that too. And one of the things he said in there is there's two parts to it. One, you just, when you're in the right mood and it's quiet and stuff, you just write. Don't think about whether you're going to use it. Don't worry about whether it makes sense. Just write. Then the other part of your brain has to kick in, and you have to figure out how to write it in a way that a stranger could read it, which is another difficult thing to do, which took a lot of feedback. But it was great advice, because you just start typing. Just type. Don't worry about whether you're ever going to use it. Because he said, I think he said that when you're done, you should be able to get rid of at least 25% of what you write.
Oh.
You're not going to find a place for it. Right. And
okay.
So that's what we did. That's what I did. And it was interesting because I had book clubs read it. Mm-hmm. Because your friends and family are going to read it. And guess what they say? Yeah, it's great.
It was great. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can tell, but this is my book behind us.
Okay. Oh, so you've done this.
Yeah, and I'm feeling every pain that you're talking about, because that was not on my radar to write a book either. So, going through the whole process, figuring it all out.
Mm-hmm. Writing it in a way that strangers can read it, especially in this case, because, you have to introduce people. You can't refer to them or imply something without introducing them.
Right.
And it was interesting because I had this one book club read it. And got together with them, 8 or 10 ladies. And, they went around and all of them talked about all the great, I love this and I love this. And I said, okay, now we're getting to the part I want. I want every one of you to tell me something you didn't like. And the one that I remember the best, I'm a guy, right? She said, you told me more about your decision to for your shoes than you did about how you felt when you finished the walk. Because I didn't really write much about that, right?
Right.
I thought a lot about what shoes I was going to use and all of that. And I spent a lot of time on that. And she said, I want to know what you felt like when you got there. I should write a revision to the book. But as you know, with writing a book, it's something that's just, it's out there. Yeah, I could change a lot of it, but.
Yeah,
it was, as it's a challenge.
It is. Even changing a back cover, as I found,
yes,
a difficult and arduous process. So now I want to know, how did you feel when you finished the walk?
So it was physically a big relief, right? Because I'm finally, this is done. But emotionally, we're also done, right? This is, we're going to leave him up there. He's not there. We know that, but this is where we say goodbye. Right. And since then I've looked back on it and I don't know how I did it, Shelly. It just all fell into place. Like I said, pure grace, no skill. Just, and that's the thing, is the willingness to do it and to work through these roadblocks like am I going to have a job when I get back? You know,
right. 4 months is a long time to be away.
Yeah. They agreed to keep me on the payroll. They did a vacation drive and people donated vacation and I'm still there. I had actually just started with them 2 weeks before Kevin passed away. It's been 18 years and I'm still there.
Wow.
Wow. They've treated me well.
Yes. That's incredible. So I did notice when I flipped over to your website. So you said he passed away in 2005, but your walk didn't start until 2007. So it was about 18 months because you said he passed July 10th to February. So
yeah,
approximately 18 months. So you'd only been with that company for maybe 9 or 10 months when you really started implementing all this planning and them probably starting to gather the vacation days for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, you could imagine the process of trying to figure out, okay, you know, everybody said, well, you should be able to get a shoe sponsor or you should be able to get this. I really didn't have any luck with any of that. I talked to a lot because I needed somebody to kind of help me because I didn't know what I was doing. Right.
Sure.
And Not My Kid was the organization that stepped up and I talked to them and I thought it was going to be, because I'd talked to shoe companies and sent letters out and talked to people and I got a lot of thanks, but no thanks. Mm-hmm. But they're the ones that, it was kind of interesting. I actually wrote about it in the book. When I talked to this young lady, I walked away from there thinking, yeah, we're going to be moving on to something else. This ain't going to happen. And it turned out that wasn't true. I told her she's a good poker player because I had no idea that they were drawn into it like that.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, it is. It's not as easy as people think to get sponsors or get things paid for. Yes, there are lots of people who have great and fantastic ideas, and that's why it's so hard to get. You have to find that person that makes that connection with you and believes in what you're believing in as much as you do.
Yeah.
To yeah. say, yeah, I want to do this with you.
Yeah. And they did. They funded a bunch of it as well. I'll give kudos to, if you don't live in Arizona, you probably don't remember Todd Stottlemyre. He was a pitcher for the Arizona Diamondbacks. He was one of the key people that put up the money for this. And it was another one of those things where I thought it was already put to bed. And she said, well, you got to come up and we're going to talk to the board about it. And I'm thinking, well, you already told me we're going to do this. And it was funny because the power went out, something happened, and I didn't have really anything I could show them or anything else. And I don't even remember what I read them, but I read something to them that I had written, and that was it.
Hmm.
I probably should go back and figure that out, shouldn't I? I don't remember what I read, but that was it.
Wow.
They got on board. And that's the thing with these things is, not everybody's going to believe in your story or your thing the way you do, right?
Right.
Another little bit of a funny story. So I said that at the beginning, I tell people that I just wanted to listen to the story. I'm not telling them how to live their life, right? I had a speaker tell me one time, I was talking to him, young guy, and he said, you're not still speaking at high schools, are you? I said, well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I am. I still do junior highs and high schools. He said, you're too old to do that. They're not going to listen to you. And at the time, you might be a little bit offended by that, right?
Sure.
But that's, and I've had principals tell me that's the most important thing you said. It was that thing right at the beginning where you tell them, I'm not here to tell you how to live your life. And that's where it came from. So there's all these little things that make it all possible.
Yeah. So with the writing of the book, with the walk, with the continual speaking engagements, what is your hope? What is it? It's a desired outcome
You know, I don't think it's for me to know when I'll be done and what that is. Okay. It's something very good. But I don't think it's for me to know. I really don't. I'm still doing a fair amount of it. I'm getting closer to retirement, as you can probably tell. We'll see. But given that it's something, what I would call vague, something very good will come from this. I don't know what it is, so I got to keep going. Right? Okay. And that's what I'm going to do.
Awesome. Well, yeah. I wish you tremendous success, I guess, since you don't know what you want.
Yeah.
Or what your hope is for the end. But again, Barry, thank you so much for sharing your journey and Kevin's last walk. And to my audience, make sure, you know, that you get out and you get a book. And give him some of his money back that he might have lost on his 4 months journey.
I do have one more thing, Shelley, and this is something I like to say at the end of each podcast. The way I do speaking stuff requires somebody at a school or somebody that knows people at a school to make that connection for me. And in the audience, if there's somebody that wants me to come to their school, obviously, Arizona, I don't need to, you know, I do those for free, but out of state, we'd have to work something out. But I'll do it. If it's possible at all, we'll make it happen. Just reach out to me. If you've got connections, we'll try to make it happen.
Yeah, I actually know 3 high school principals in my county. So I will more than happily introduce you to
I'll send you some information on that.
Yeah.
It kind of helps, kind of a synopsis.
But absolutely. And so if somebody's wanting to do that, is it through your website? That's kind of why I was going to your website before, and then I took it off and I forgot to.
Is probably the most likely, I would go to the Facebook page and message me.
Okay.
It's usually the best place to do it. If you can't, if you're not on Facebook, which some people aren't, you can email me on the website. And I think we even have our number in there.
Okay, for some reason, your Facebook banner picture, I thought it was mine that I was looking at, and so I wasn't clicking on that button for that to be shared. So, because the gray sky, I have a gray sky in my personal one, so that was throwing me off. So, yeah, Kevin's Last Walk, A Father's Final Journey with His Son is your Facebook page. So you have opportunity there to catch him or, his sounds like that's the preferred way, or the website that I shared just a little bit ago. And I will very quickly grab the website address. I mean, I know it's Facebook, but it's just sometimes easier to have it and you can just click on it and go right there. So I'm putting that in the chat section. So if anybody wants to just click on that, and then I will have the website popped up during the episode a couple of times, but I will copy that and put that as well into the chat so that anybody who wants to find you that way can do that as well. And again, just thank you. It's a very tough thing to talk about, drinking, underage drinking, any kind of binge drinking in general, but then for it to be such a personal and hard story to tell. I just don't think I could thank you enough for sharing
with
me and my audience today. So
thank you, Robbie.
Yeah, absolutely. You all join me next week. I'm going to have Katie Whittier. She is a fabulous businesswoman who just in the last year, I believe, has been diagnosed with autism, had no idea she had it leading up to that. And so she's going to share her journey with us. So thank you. God bless. And I will see you all next week. Bye-bye.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.